Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the older episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to Tricia Barker about her book, Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival and Transformation. Tricia experienced a profound near-death experience during her senior year of college. Hi, Tricia. Thank you very much for giving us your time and coming onto the podcast. You had quite an experience with your NDE, but before you had that experience, were you a religious person?
You know, that's a great question. I grew up in a home that was largely evangelical, and I did have this relationship with Christ and with religious experiences as a child, but my family was kind of a tough family, and I looked around at who they were, and I looked around at people in Christian churches. And by the time I was in junior high and high school, I was largely agnostic. I just loved learning and I loved study. But as an agnostic, I mean, I remained somewhat open to a spiritual reality. I just didn't care for religion. So that was where I was at before my near-death experience.
And so how did it come about that you had the NDE?
Well, I was on my way to run the Austin 10K. I was a college student at the time, and it was my last year of school, and I had specific plans about what I wanted to do with my life, and this race was a symbol of getting my life back together and you know, just being in a good space. Well, I had almost a head-on collision at about 60 miles an hour on the way to run that race, and I waited a while, but during spinal surgery, I had pretty intensive injuries and I bled to death on the operating table and had a full, profound near-death experience, and it changed everything.
So what was the first thing that happened when you left your body? What did you see?
Well, the very first thing that I saw was my body. So I lifted up out of my body, and it was when you don't have a physical body, you see differently. So it was like I saw the entire room in this 360-degree vision. And I looked down at my body and I saw the surgeons and I felt a part of them. And, you know, when people say that these experiences are just the brain shutting down, I just laugh because from that first moment, I knew that I was not my body. This was not my brain. This was an experience totally disconnected from my body. And that first moment convinced me of a spiritual reality. And that first moment is really just an out-of-body experience, you know, where you're looking down at the body. And wow, surgery was brutal, Simon. It was like bloody. It was pretty gross, you know, the actual surgery. And so I was looking at the surgeons and I didn't feel any fear. I felt excitement that we go on because I was afraid of death before the near-death experience. I thought, oh God, I'm just going to die and there's going to be nothing. And how sad is that? Then we've got to hang on to every moment and make the best of this life. And when I lifted up out of form, I was just excited. And then I quickly saw the angels who were about nine feet, just very tall. I can't estimate how tall they were exactly, but larger than humans. And they were so calming and so intelligent. My first thought was, wow, they have so much intelligence. And I felt at ease in their presence.
And you call them angels, but would I be right to assume that they're not like the classic angels that we would see in paintings?
Yeah, so I only knew from paintings these winged type of angels, but these were powerful, intelligent light beings, and they seemed to be composed of light, and light seemed to be key in what they wanted to say and do. Like, this light seemed to communicate intelligence, but it also communicated healing and peace and intelligence from God. And they seemed to be able to slow down their communication to me. And at one point, they did slow down this communication and said, watch this. And now I know from Reiki workers and different people that certainly you can use light energy to heal and to facilitate healing, but I had never seen that before. I mean, that was a foreign concept to a 22-year-old, you know, who saw these angels working through these surgeons, sending this light into my physical form. And it assured me that I would walk, I would be okay, that my body would heal, because when I went into surgery, there was a lot of pain in my body and I was losing feeling in my leg. And so I was afraid I'd not walk. And they assured me that I would, and that they seemed to have some control over this physical reality, which was shocking to me. You know, I mean, that's a revelation in itself.
And I suppose if you're capable of running a 10K, then you would have been strong anyway, that it's not like you had a frail body that's just going to give up.
Right, right. Yeah. So I was in great shape, and I'd wanted to place in my age category for that race, believe it or not. You know, I was training hard, and, you know, that might have helped me survive, because I look at some of the accident reports in that type of car that I was in, a Honda Civic. And at that rate, without an airbag, they usually say it's just death.
Did you get a sense that the angels were some kind of spirits that had never been incarnated on Earth? It's not like they were people that had died and moved on.
Right. You know, no one has ever asked me that question. That's a wonderful question. They did not seem like human beings who had moved on. They seemed to be very different. And, you know, messengers of God or light beings or these highly evolved, intelligent beings makes a lot more sense. I only knew from the first glance that they knew more about this environment outside of my body than I understood. And so I could trust them. I could rely on their intelligence, and I could rely on what they knew. But that's a great question. Yeah, I did not get the sense that they were ever humans.
And was the communication kind of like telepathic, or was it just like we would talk to each other with sentences?
There were moments when they slowed down and they were like sentences, but most of the communication was telepathic. And so they might send a wave of healing, peaceful energy into my spirit form, which calmed me down. And then they might send a lot of information. I've often wondered if I've unpacked some of that information later. You know, it seemed as if they looked at me at one point, and I do remember this, and they were trying to communicate that I would never be the same, and that they were changing me in that moment, and that I needed to see the world differently. And I know from waking up after that near-death experience that I was just not the same person. And so there seemed, people call it upgrades or, you know, whatever you want to call it now, but I looked at it as they were filling me with a new way of looking at my life, the world, this reality, and seeing things from different perspectives. And that moment was a profound part of the near-death experience. That wasn't all of it, but I certainly, you know, that image of the angels in the emergency room, it stays with me.
And I suppose getting that kind of information, which is so profound and highly emotional, it does take time to assimilate and to get to know it for yourself.
Yeah, it's like you hold it deeply within your soul and hold on to it. But as you walk through this world, you know, there are challenges to bringing that kind of spiritual information and light into this world. Not everybody wants to talk about it. I'm always so appreciative when people want to interview me or, you know, call me or talk about these things, because there's a lot of people who are pretty superficial and selfish and, you know, just like guided in life in this little bubble of themselves. And there's so many connections. There's so many mysteries. There's so much that we don't know. And there's so much that we can continue to learn and ways that we can continue to evolve. And yeah, I think this focus is important.
Did you travel around the hospital at all before you moved on?
Yes. So I stayed as soon as the monitor flatlined and I knew that I was dead. I didn't want to watch how I was revived. And I went, my spirit body just kind of left and went out into the corridor. And I saw my stepdad getting a candy bar. And that one little fact has been important to researchers because I later confirmed that he did get a candy bar. And I remember looking at him, and it's kind of strange in this part of the near-death experience. I felt like there was maybe a choice to not come back. And I thought, well, maybe I'm not going to be revived in there and that's fine. And, you know, it just felt like saying goodbye to him in this sense. And I thought, oh, I hope he's good to my mom, and then just kind of moved on. I didn't know why I spent time looking at him because I didn't really know him that well. My parents had divorced when I was 18 and she'd remarried a couple years later. And then as I left the hospital, I felt this oneness with everyone I'd ever known. And that was a peaceful feeling. Like, I think a lot of people imagine that if you feel a oneness with everyone you've ever known, you might dislike people. But I like them more. You know, when you know into the hearts and souls of everyone, you know that basically people want love and peace and happiness, and their fear and insecurity and anger sometimes prevents them from leading good lives. But at the heart of everyone, there is this divinity and wish for a good life. And so I generally kind of liked everyone and wished them well and, you know, realized this kind of saying goodbye to every soul that I'd ever known was just a way of honoring the journey. And then I started feeling this greater oneness with everyone in the town, which there were a lot of people I hadn't met in Austin, Texas, but I felt this oneness with them. And that was an interesting feeling. You know, how can you be yourself and also be one with everyone? I still retained this identity of my own spirit form, but I also felt just an understanding, like a thread that went through every human being, and I just understood them. And then as the near-death experience progressed, I kind of moved into this, what I call like a cosmos or night sky. And I began to feel God, and God as this intelligent light that was far away at this point, but was still there present in my experience. And God showed me a few moments in my life and a life review, which is common in near-death experiences. And I was young at the time, and so I think what I was meant to learn is to not judge people and to be open to people with good hearts, because, you know, you look at fashion trends and this kind of thing, and I think, you know, teenagers and young people often judge people based on the way they look. And I just saw suddenly in that near-death experience how the heart is everything. You know, it truly is. And I was missing out on just great people all around me because of my superficial ways of viewing the world. And I saw how much more meaningful my life would be if I looked into the hearts of people, kind of the way God looks into the hearts of people. And, you know, circling back around to religion, I do feel like there's a connection between near-death experiences and religious experiences, but it's maybe not always what people expect, and that makes them, you know, feel angry. But I heard some messages that, much like the angels slowed down to communicate with me, God began to slow down at different times. I was getting a lot of information, but I would hear specific things like love is all that matters, remind them to go to nature, be like a little child. And that statement, be like a little child, is obviously reminiscent of Jesus. And so there is that connection, that great wisdom. But it seemed to me in that space that it was just powerful, profound wisdom that was being conveyed to me, that it wasn't this exactly, just like the angels weren't like paintings, you know, the experience of God wasn't exactly, you know, the way that someone might interpret the Bible.
Yeah. So when you talk about God, so I assume you're saying that you don't mean the Christian God, it's just some kind of all powerful, all full of wisdom force or energy?
Yeah, it seemed like an intelligent light force that was full of profound, loving energy, and that I was safe. I didn't for a moment feel unsafe. I felt protected and loved and like this God force, this light, this divinity just wanted me to be a better person and a happier person and to make better choices for myself and for others and to remember that major lesson that love is all that matters and all that we take with us. And many near-death experiencers hear something similar. And it seems like that's our big challenge here on Earth, as simple as it is. You know, how do we, in every situation, choose God, choose love, choose something that is going to make our lives and the lives around us more meaningful and more beautiful? You know, we fail sometimes, but then other times we succeed. And I think when we keep that in mind, life just works better. And that seemed to be part of that. But yeah, this God force, I didn't see a human figure. I saw a light and I felt this change. And, you know, the way that near-death experiencers are often attacked, and I've heard this a million times, and it just, again, you know, like agnostics attack in one way, and then religious people will attack in another way. And they say, oh, that's just, you know, some demonic force. And I have to laugh at that too, because I'm like, dude, if you were in the presence of God, you're not going to mistake that, okay? That kind of powerful love is unmistakable. And so, you know, I know what I felt.
Did you feel that the God was the creator, so to speak, of the universe?
Yes. I mean, now that you ask that question, I feel like with an intelligence like that, how could God not be the creator? I felt created or a part of God. And certainly, much like the angels, there was a knowing that was far, far greater than my own. And so I just rested and relaxed in that knowing.
We could just ask you about the life review. How did it actually work? Was it like watching a TV, or was it some more of an internal experience?
You know, it was both, but the way I saw it, it was as if the light of God projected an image. And so here's this night sky, and it looked like a little bubble, and this bubble of a memory would slow down, and I'd look at it. And instead of just being me, I was able to be other people too and experience their thoughts and feelings about me and how I reacted. And so I think, you know, people will be pretty surprised, you know, when they say, wow, I had that good effect or that bad effect on other people, and you see your connection to them. So in this one little bubble, I saw how people at work prayed for me and cared about me, and how I was just so self-absorbed. I didn't ask any questions about them or their lives, and really just thought I was cooler than them. And I looked at myself and I was like, well, that's ridiculous. I need to change. You know, I don't need to be that way. I need to actually care about these people around me and how sweet they are. And their hearts were so good. They literally cared for me. And that shocked me, you know, that strangers could care, or acquaintances, you know, could actually care. So the way it looked to me was like, imagine if you, we don't have the technology now, but maybe someday we will. But, you know, you just look at a full image there right in front of you, and it slows down, and you can rewind it, you can look at it, and then you can really be a part of it. That's kind of the way the near-death experience was. But I would flip through some things very quickly.
You were watching this with God, but what I've heard other and near-death experiences say is that there is no kind of judgment at all, that they're just there to support you while you go through this.
Yeah, yeah. So I wasn't condemned in any way. I was shown how to be better. Maybe I looked at myself and wanted to be better. And I think that's the point. Like if we could all realize our effect on other people, we'd probably be just better. You know, like empathy is an important part of this world and an important part of being a good person. And so I think a life review develops strong empathy because you just feel what other people feel.
What happened next? You had the life review, but you moved on to another space from there, didn't you?
Yes. So after the life review, I ended up in this heavenly landscape, and My grandfather was there. I wouldn't have recognized him had he not shown up in this truck that he gave my family. And so the truck was restored to its beautiful, you know, original form. And my grandfather looked like he was in his late 30s or 40s and not how I remembered him. Only when he was in the truck and I saw his jaw, did I go, oh, that's my grandfather. And he was the only person who I knew who was on the other side. And I chose my form as I entered this heavenly landscape. And since God had said, be like a little child, I took it literally. And I was like, hey, let's go back to childhood. And so my spirit form became this childlike version of myself. And I was so happy. And I was there with my grandfather and just enjoying the beautiful, bright colors and this very peaceful place. It seemed like a holding place to me, something that, you know, you wait and you think about what you want to do next. And in that space, my grandfather communicated telepathically, just like the angels. So there wasn't this conversation going back and forth between us. There was just this look in his eyes and this knowing and this love. And he looked at me at some point. I was on the back of the truck, letting my feet drag through the grass and just enjoying nature. And I did that as a kid. And he looked at me and he said, do you want to continue on? And I saw the light of God up to, you know, up in the sky. And I thought, yes, you know, like I'm an adventurous soul and I love God. And how could I not love God? I want to keep going. And that, so my spirit form, just like it had left the hospital, it just started flying toward that love of God. And as I got closer and closer to God, every part of myself that had been broken or harmed or abused or bullied or made fun of was just healed. I was like, oh, I'm so loved. I'm so cared for. This is amazing. And then even just the small yearnings, like we feel uncomfortable in the body sometimes. And like, what are we doing here? Like, I knew that everything was okay in that moment. That, oh, if I could just express the joy and the peace and the happiness and the comfort, then I would be happy. Like I could totally tell people, you know, that is the best feeling on earth. And it is, you know, better than anything, any passionate love. If you amplify the greatest love of your life, whether that's for kids or, you know, for a romantic experience, whatever it is, if you amplify it millions of times, you're just beginning to feel how good it feels to be in the presence of God. And I wanted to keep going. I felt prayers from family members trying to pull me back to my body. And I just wished them well. I was like, whatever, this is too good. I just want to stay. I don't want to go back there. That's not a place that is interesting. And, you know, as I journeyed closer to God, God stopped me at some point and told me to look down at the earth. And I saw this long river and all these souls. And it was communicated that I had to teach, and not as a spiritual teacher, but as an actual teacher, you know, public school teacher, college professor, that sort of thing, and that I would be in the lives of students. And I was really pissed because I didn't want to be a teacher. So I argued with God. I'd grown up poor and I wanted, you know, a more lucrative career. And God seemed to laugh at me in that moment, like, oh, you know, like I know you better than you know yourself. And this is what you need to do. And these kids need you. And I saw that without me, in some instances, they might live a life filled with more fear or more pain, and that there was something that I would give to them, whatever it was, that would help them find their mission and find their light and find who it was they were meant to be. And so my life was not about me at that point. It was really about that mission. And a lot of near-death experiencers are maybe even a little envious that I was given a direct mission, because many people have these profound experiences and then come back to their body and they're like, how am I supposed to incorporate this? But from the beginning, I knew, all right, got to go get a teaching certification. And every time I stepped into a classroom, I was like, got to let that love of God work through me.
And do you enjoy being a teacher? Do you feel that actually this is a great thing and this really does suit me?
Yes, from day one, I just fell in love with every group of students. And, you know, I realized that unconditional love and attention can turn lives around. And, you know, I made a pact with myself that I would do no harm in the educational field. So I would never say anything that was angry or discouraging to a single student. I was like, if I'm boring one day, that doesn't matter. But, you know, if I do something that harms someone, that matters. But basically, I took that idea of God, you know, God's unconditional love. And I thought, does it matter what these students have done, if they're in gangs, if they have, you know, lived tough lives, I will just bring unconditional love to this situation and see what can be done and what can be turned around. And when you enter a place with unconditional love, you do melt a lot of hearts. You know, like, people just want to be acknowledged. They want to be told that they can do something. And when someone believes in them, even just a little bit, you see that power of that belief begin to work in their lives. And so it was magical. I never would have dreamed that teaching would be what I loved this much, but I guess it was the magic of the other side. The minute my foot would step in a school, I would feel like I was no longer me. I would feel like, okay, God's in my life. Angels might speak through me. These kids need me. And I would just get out of the way. And some people criticize this and say, you know, oh, wounded healers are, you know, messed up in their lives. And I'm like, well, dude, you weren't experiencing what I was experiencing. You know, like, I don't consider myself necessarily a wounded healer. I just considered myself this vehicle for divinity.
Do you feel that angels work through you in the same way that you saw the angels working through a surgeon, that where you might be in the classroom and they'd be there right with you at that moment, in some way subconsciously giving you ideas?
Definitely. So that image stayed with me. So I would pray many times before going into a classroom and ask them to be with me. And I thought, maybe I'm energetically sensitive enough to feel it sometimes. And I did. So there were moments when my consciousness would be so shifted aside that I wouldn't even remember what I said in the lecture. I'm sure it was connected to the literature that we were talking about, but I might, you know, have a side story about something that was meant to reach a particular student. And there've been a few lectures where I don't remember what I've said, but some student will come to me afterwards crying and give me a hug and say, you were speaking directly to me. I don't know why. I don't even understand what happened in this moment, but thank you. And so I know that messages are given to people through me.
You said earlier that you were traveling towards God and you got a sense of your family praying for you. How did that feel? How did that manifest itself?
Well, I could hear all the words and it felt like a wind. So as I was traveling towards God, I would feel like a wind and I'd hear all their words and then just acknowledge it. And so I think that should give comfort to people who pray for someone who dies, that they still might hear your prayer and they still might acknowledge it and be grateful that you cared about them, you know, that it can still be felt.
How long did your NDE seem to last while you were experiencing it compared to your actual time that you were sort of dead?
Yeah, so the actual time I later found out was close to 2.5 minutes. And the near-death experience felt like eternity. You know, like, it felt so long. I thought I was there for weeks, days. Time is relative. And I did have a problem with time after coming out of the near-death experience. On one hand, it wasn't a problem. You know, I just kind of knew what time it was. You know, I didn't have to look at watches too often. I could kind of estimate the time. But I also felt somewhat timeless. You know, just sometimes I'd feel like I was in the future. Psychic flashes would start happening. Sometimes I'd feel like I was in the past. Like, there was, felt jumbled in time after that experience. But yeah, it felt much longer than 2.5 minutes.
And so when you came round after the operation, was the healing process, did it seem accelerated? Like, the angels had given you some great healing power?
Yeah, so not at first. It was scary as hell in the ICU and in the rooms after that. So I was in the hospital for 9 days and they had to do kind of gruesome things like pull the staples out of my back and put a body cast on me, and I had a lot of morphine. But even in that state, I knew I'd had a near-death experience. I asked for a sheet of paper, and I wrote down what I could remember and about the angels, and it was really kind of poetic and beautiful, even from that first moment. And I started telling people that I'd seen God and I'd experienced God, and I asked my surgeon, how long I was dead. I told her I knew I was dead, that I'd had a near-death experience. And I'd heard of these. I hadn't read any Raymond Moody books or anything, but I had a friend in high school who she knew a guy from her high school who had a near-death experience. And she said and it was due to a drug overdose. And she said he was completely changed after that, like not even the same person. And so that stood out in my mind. And I was like, I had what that guy had. I knew that something had happened.
And did you get any bad reactions from the medical staff? Because some of them can be really quite skeptical.
Yeah, so my surgeon was guarded, and I look back and I don't know if she was afraid that she'd have to address it, or if she just didn't. She was a cutting edge surgeon and doing really wonderful things with spinal surgery. And largely, I felt like she just wanted to focus on the fact that she did a great job on my back. She was like, "Hey, you're going to walk and you're going to be fine." And the surgery was so successful. So when I'd talk about that kind of stuff, she'd switch me back to the physical and just kind of move it aside and go, And then nurses would. Some of them would listen more and they'd try to be comforting. One nurse was like, Yeah, I believe in God too. That's wonderful. But it seemed patronizing. It didn't seem to her. In that moment, I wanted to go, it's not a belief, it's an experience. There's a difference. And it was hard to communicate that to people. So, yeah, family members had mixed reactions. And certainly, if you're, very religious, many people just want to hear that you saw Jesus. And what I saw was a light. And I did hear, that one message of be like a little child, which is biblical, but people weren't necessarily open to that. They just wanted to hold on to what they know. And there was a sense of moral superiority. I think people looked at me and thought, how could this rebellious, wild college student be greeted in heaven? Shouldn't she experience hell, for the bad things she's done? And I don't know what they thought I'd done that was so bad, but there's people judge. And so there wasn't a lot in my family. There wasn't a lot of, oh, that's wonderful, tell me more, that kind of experience.
Do you ever get the feeling, or have you ever thought that it may be the angels or some force that engineered your accident so that you would have this experience that they were looking down at you? You thought, you know what? We need to have a word with her.
Yes, it's interesting. An astrologer interviewed me and she said it was in my astrological chart that this was a possibility. And I was beginning to have premonitions before the experience happened. And I leave that out a lot of times, but I think that I was beginning to feel outside of time even before the near-death experience happened. And I was feeling more and more fear about death right before it happened. So there seemed to be a force that seemed to be guiding this in my life. And it definitely, I mean, it altered my path in a good way, but it seemed meant to be in so many ways.
And have you had after effects that other NDEs have, such as little psychic flashes and synchronicities?
Oh yeah, I've had a lot of them. I can't wear watches even to this day. And it's funny interviewing people or talking, on my phone. I'll run my battery down way too much. I have these weird things that will happen with computers where the screen will just start flashing on and off and on and off. And I know it's my energy because as soon as I walk away or go ground outside and come back to it, then everything calms down. So there. The strangest and probably the one experience that is the most difficult to make sense of is just this oneness with other people. So right after the near-death experience, I was walking around that town and I felt like I just understood and knew so many people who I didn't know. And that knowing works okay in a classroom, you know, because I'm there for their benefit. I'm there to help them grow and find the right career for them. And so if I know them really well ahead of time, it's not so strange. But when you're on a city bus and you kind of know people, you know, it's just odd. It's uncomfortable sometimes, like to have that kind of knowledge.
And do you ever get any kind of, mediumship experiences where like your grandfather would come and visit you or anything like that?
Yeah. So I immediately could tell when people were about to die. So my grandmother had Alzheimer's disease and I could see the light coming for her. And I knew, you know, the moments before she was about to leave. And then there were ghost experiences that I had, and I'd never had these before. And I, you know, would often just tell them, oh, go back to the light, you know, like the light is there. And I'd imagine the light and, you know, open a portal for them. But it just all came very natural to me. And it didn't seem strange that I would see spirits. I just thought, oh, you know, I died, so this is what's going to happen now. I crossed the veil, so now I know, you know, that ghosts exist. There are lost spirits. And then I would also, I didn't actively seek this, though, because, you know, I was told to be a school teacher and to teach in schools. So if someone's ancestor came to me, so if someone's grandparent, if I felt like, and usually with young kids, it's just grandparents who are in the afterlife, then I might feel that I just incorporated my advice with their advice. And I didn't even really stop to go, oh, I'm a medium. You know, I just thought, oh, this is what happens until my father died. And then I sought out other mediums. And that was really how it began, is I just wanted to make sure that I was really hearing him and they were hearing the same thing. And and then as I talked about that experience, I connected with more and more people who had lost kids or had lost someone. And I thought, you know, this is valuable. This mediumship is a beautiful, beautiful thing when it connects someone to someone they love, because discussing theological ideas and mystical ideas is not as verifiable for people as connecting with someone they love and getting a message that means a lot to them. You know, I think it increases faith.
Yeah. And also I've read that grieving people can get a lot of relief or release by hearing stories of NDEs.
Yes, definitely.
Did you get any sense or suggestion of reincarnation while you were there?
You know, what's strange is if I did, that was like one of those messages that didn't slow down, but I definitely felt like that was home and like everything made sense there. And that when we come here, it's just like a test or a trial in physical form. And it seemed as if I had done this many times before. And one bit that did come to me later is I moved across the country. I moved from Texas to Boston. And when I was in Boston, I had, and this is after the near-death experience, I really remembered everything that was before 1920. So I had this idea and this, you know, if I just knew the town. And so I was pretty certain that I'd lived there before and that was my last life before this one and that I had died as an older woman. And I remembered the floors that I had, the marble floors, and what my life had been like before that. And I even remembered my dying wish, you know, was to come back and to experience more freedom and more artistic freedom and I guess the ability to just be a woman in society and express myself artistically and be taken seriously. Cause I think I had all these wishes in that life and I didn't get to fulfill them. And I was giving away money to younger people who wanted to be artists and just supporting them and in my final years. And so I thought, oh, that's interesting. I just remembered so much and so many details about that last life.
And did you get any detail, like names or anything like that?
No, I get a really clear image of how I looked and who I was in my journey. So I know I was born in San Francisco and I know much of that life. And then I married someone a bit older who died before me and left me kind of a nice house. And I never had kids in that life. And so I know a lot of details, but I don't really know names. I know I had red hair in that life.
Yeah, you're writing a book, aren't you?
Yeah, so OR is operating room. It's Angels in the Operating Room, OR. And then it begins with my near-death experience. But since I'm a professor and, you know, I look around at society and sociological issues, I really wanted to cover what it was like being a young person in this culture and having this kind of experience and trying to incorporate it into a life that is sometimes challenging. And, you know, I know a lot of people write about near-death experiences, but when I started this book, I didn't look at other books about near-death experience as my competition. I looked at other books like Eat, Pray, Love, books like The Glass Castle, just memoirs about interesting lives. And as my competition, you know, I wanted to write something that's very mainstream for people who don't usually gravitate to just near-death experience stories. Like, I wanted my story to just be a story that someone would go, interesting. Let's see what her life is about. And let's see, you know, what her writing is like. And so that was the goal. And I was halfway through writing a young adult novel and National Geographic interviewed me and I knew that they were just going to give this little portion of my story. And I thought, oh, that doesn't do it justice. I think I do actually have to write about this near-death experience. So it was a long journey. I started in late 2015 and the book will be out, my publisher said, April 2019.
Is it right that you teach creative writing?
I do. I teach English and creative writing. So I love helping people share their own stories in fiction and poetry and nonfiction and memoir. It's a lot of fun.
And so will you be going back to writing fiction?
I definitely will. I will finish that young adult novel. And then I want to write things geared towards helping college students and maybe others, but in a nonfiction kind of self-help way. I will never write about my life ever again like this. And yeah, when you say never, you know, that's kind of a strong word. So we'll see. But yeah, it opens you up to extra attack, you know, people ask you why you're writing about spiritual experiences and trying to make money from a spiritual experience. I'm like, no, I'm writing because I'm a writer and I want you to judge me based on my writing. You know, that's why.
Can you tell us about your YouTube channel and your website?
Yeah. So I, a little over a year ago, I started interviewing other near-death experiencers because I thought, hey, maybe I'll learn from their experiences or, you know, they'll be like my brothers and sisters who have been over there and I can maybe ask questions to bring out their experiences in different ways. And it has been such a joy to connect with other near-death experiencers. And then I've also talked with healers and researchers and mediums, and I certainly want to expand the channel and even talk to people who have just faced mortality in some way or lost a child and want to weigh in on their spiritual experience. And I want to open this up to just people who are making a difference in this world and who are really offering a message in a new and an interesting way. But I have a ton of fun just talking with people.
And do you find talking to other people who've had an NDE, you have a kind of a shorthand, an understanding?
Yeah. And what has surprised me so much, Simon, is energetically, I will feel parts of their near-death experience. So if I go into meditation and they experience something slightly different than I did, it's like on an energetic level, I get to experience that. And it's been such a gift. And I wonder, you've interviewed people. I mean, do you ever take energetically from them something you feel like, oh, that helped me kind of live part of their experience?
I haven't felt like that, but I have felt that my view of people around me and is kind of changing, and I try and behave better than I did before. Not that I was ever particularly bad.
Right. Yeah. So you internalize some of the messages.
It really is an education sitting down and talking with people like this and learning through their experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I just love it. The energetic part for me is just beautiful because I meditate a lot. You know, that's still how I remain connected to that light. And sometimes I have out-of-body experiences during meditation. But I think near-death experiencers, we struggle sometimes because that love of God is so beautiful that we kind of are brokenhearted and kind of long for it for the rest of our existence, if that makes sense.
Really get the impression every time that it's not something that can be described. It's like the English language can't do it.
No, it just can't. But all I can do is just assure people that any part of their heart or mind that feels pain, all that is gone away in the presence of God. That love is enough to overcome anything. And then that should be the hope here that, you know, even though it takes more time and more practice, that you can keep bringing that love of God into every situation and watch it transform.
Well, thank you very much for coming and talking on the podcast. It's been very kind of you.
Oh, no, it's been wonderful. I love your podcast, and thanks so much for reaching out to me.
Thank you. And that was an interview with Tricia Barker about her book, Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation. And I have a new website. It is simonbown.com. That's Bown, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website. And you can go to this website for past life regression, as well as info on my books and my podcast. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review. And thanks for listening.